Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and we're going on a tour of the stars and planets you'll see overhead on February evenings and mornings. In fact, there's lots of action in the sky before sunrise, which for most of us northerners doesn't come until about 7 a.m. in early February. You won't see Venus before dawn. It's hidden behind the sun, though you just might see it at month's end low in the west after sunset. But you can't miss Jupiter, which rises 1 or 2 hours after midnight and is due south about a third of the way up from the horizon to overhead as dawn approaches. By month's end, it rises around midnight, gradually brightening during these weeks as the distance between it and Earth shrinks. Look to Jupiter's left for Mars, which is about one clenched fist away early in February and two fists away late in the month. Don't confuse Mars with the star Antares, which is about half a fist below it. Antares loosely translates as rival of Mars, and the way they look now makes that obvious. Both are about the same apparent brightness, even though Antares is more than 2 million times farther away. In fact, this red supergiant outshines the sun by nearly 100,000 times. Wow. Let your gaze continue drifting toward lower left by 2 or 3 fists, and you'll bump into Saturn. Get up early on the morning of February 11th. Yes, I know it's a Sunday, and you'll be rewarded with a view of Saturn and a beautiful, delicate crescent moon perched just above it. You might notice that Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars are all rather low in the sky. That's because Earth's North Pole is tipped away from them. But if you're listening to this from Australia, Africa, or South America, you're in the hemisphere of Earth tipped toward these planets, and for you, they'll appear much higher up. Now let's turn our attention to the evening sky, where the solar system pickings are pretty slim. There are no bright planets around, and no strong meteor showers. Heck, there isn't even a full moon this month. You heard me correctly. It takes 29.5 days to go from full moon to full moon. We had one January 31st, and there'll be another at the beginning of March. But February has only 28 days. We only get a full moonless February once every 19 years. So it's quite the calendrical oddity. February is often the coldest month of the year for northerners, but the sun is telling a different story. The December solstice came and went several weeks ago, and you can already notice that the days are getting longer, with earlier sunrises and later sunsets. The celestial geometry is changing too, as the sun is starting to slide farther north in the sky. In fact, during February, the sun races northward among the stars by about 1 degree every 3 days. Heck, in no time at all, we'll be on the threshold of spring. But the stars of winter are still firmly in control of the nighttime firmament. Let's track a few of them down. Note where the sun sets and, once twilight starts to envelop you, wheel around to the left until you're looking in nearly the opposite direction. There you'll find the night sky's most dazzling star, Sirius, down near the southeastern horizon. Also known as the Dog Star, Sirius appears so bright partly because it is bright, outshining the sun by 25 times, and partly because it's relatively close by, only 8.5 light-years away. Above Sirius is the distinctive pattern of Orion the Hunter, the quintessential constellation of winter, or of summer, I suppose, if you live in Australia. Orion is unmistakable, even if you suffer from lots of light pollution, with 3 stars in a tight diagonal row marking his belt, surrounded by a tall, boxy quartet of bright stars that frame his torso. To the belt's upper left is the red supergiant star Betelgeuse, which marks Orion's left shoulder. Now, you'd never guess it, because it's 428 light-years away, but Betelgeuse is one of the brightest stars known. If you swapped it for our sun, its surface would be somewhere between Mars and Jupiter, and Earth? It would be digested into star stuff. To the upper right of Betelgeuse, by about 2 fists, is another red giant star. That's Aldebaran, the angry eye of the bull Taurus. Look closely. As with Antares in the morning sky, both of these beacons have a reddish tinge that sets them apart subtly from the stars around them. As you look around this part of the sky, you'll notice a bunch of bright stars. Skygazers often trace out an enormous 6-sided pattern called the winter hexagon that connects them. To find it, imagine that Betelgeuse is in the middle of the hexagon. To its lower right, on the other side of Orion's belt is icy white Rigel, marking the hunter's left foot. From there, slide your gaze to the lower left by 3 fists until you reach Sirius. Continue clockwise around the hexagon, heading upper left by 3 fists to reach the star Procyon. Now glide to the upper left until you reach Pollux and above it Castor. These are the twins of Gemini. Continue toward the upper right of the twins, almost overhead, to find Capella. From there, it's a 3-fist hop down to Aldebaran, and another 3-fist hop brings you back to Rigel. There you have it, the winter hexagon. Rigel, Sirius, Procyon, Pollux, Capella, and Aldebaran, with Betelgeuse anchoring its middle. Like Sirius, most of these sparklers are pretty close by, though some of the bright stars of Orion are relatively distant, 800 light-years or more. They're all in this part of the sky because we're looking along the disk of the Milky Way, outward rather than toward its center, and the stars are just more numerous and generally closer when we look in that direction. For a little contrast, shift your gaze to the right of Orion. Even if you don't have a lot of light pollution, you'll see that there's not much there. This wide expanse of sky, stretching all the way over to the Great Square of Pegasus over in the west, is occupied by 3 big but dim constellations that all involve water. The first, nearest to Orion, is Eridanus, representing an ancient mythical river. It begins at the foot of Orion, near Rigel, and meanders sideways and downward for quite some distance. Its brightest star, Acherinar, is well below the horizon for northern observers. To the river's right is Cetus, the ancient sea monster who attacked Princess Andromeda as she lay chained to a rock. The brightest star in Cetus is Diphta, glowing low in the southwest right now. The third constellation is one you probably know, at least by name, and that's Pisces. These celestial fish are fashioned from a string of faint stars in a big V-shape, lying on its right side, that parallels the left half of the Great Square of Pegasus. You might be able to make out a pentagon of faint stars below the square, known as the circlet, that marks the eastern end of Pisces. Why are there so many water constellations down in the southern sky? Apparently this stems from ancient Mesopotamians and their sacred water god Enki, who inhabited the southern part of the sky. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, I'll introduce you to twin brothers who've really made a name for themselves. Until then, I wish you clear skies.